even though that meant accepting Galiana's machines into his head. Later, along with Galiana, Felka, and their allies, Clavaine had escaped from the system in a prototype starship, the Sandra Voy. Clavaine's old side had done their best to stop the ship from leaving, but they had failed, and the Sandra Voy had safely reached interstellar space. Galiana's intention had been to explore a number of solar systems within a dozen or so light-years of Earth, until she found a world that her party could colonize without the risk of persecution. Diadem had been their first port of call. A month ago, at the beginning of the expedition, it had been much easier to justify these excursions. Even some of the true conjoiners had been drawn by a primal human urge to walk out into the wilderness, surrounding themselves with kilometers of beautifully tinted, elegantly fractured, unthinking ice. It was good to be somewhere quiet and pristine, after the war-torn solar system that they had left behind. Diadem was an Earth-like planet, orbiting the star Ross 248. It had oceans, ice caps, plate tectonics, and signs of reasonably advanced multicellular life. Plants had already invaded Diadem's land, and some animals, the equivalents of arthropods, mollusks, and worms, had begun to follow in their wake. The largest land-based animals were still small by terrestrial standards, since nothing in the oceans had yet evolved an internal skeleton. There was nothing that showed any signs of intelligence, but that was only a minor disappointment. It would still take a lifetime study just to explore the fantastic array of body plans, metabolisms, and survival strategies that Diadem life had blindly evolved. Yet even before Galiana had sent down the first survey shuttles, a shattering truth had become apparent. Someone had reached Diadem before them. The signs were unmistakable. Glints of refined metal on the surface picked out by radar. Upon inspection from orbit, they turned out to be ruined structures and equipment, obviously of human origin. "It's not possible," Clavaine had said. "We're the first. We have to be the first. No one else has ever built anything like the Sandra Voy. Nothing capable of traveling this far." Somewhere in there, Galiana had answered, "I think there might be a mistaken assumption, don't you?" Meekly, Clavaine had nodded. Now, later still than he had promised, Clavaine made his way back to the waiting shuttle. The red carpet of safety led straight to the access ramp beneath the craft's belly. He climbed up and stepped through the transparent membrane that spanned the entrance door, most of his suit slithering away on contact with the membrane. By the time he was inside the ship, he wore only a lightweight breather mask and a few communication devices. He could have survived outside naked for many minutes. Diadem's atmosphere now had enough oxygen to support humans, but Galiana refused to allow any intermingling of microorganisms. He returned the equipment to a storage locker, placed the worm sample in a refrigeration rack, and clothed himself in a paper-thin black tunic and trousers before moving into the aft compartment where Galiana was waiting. She and Felka were sitting facing each other across the blank-walled, austerely furnished room. They were staring into the space between them without quite meeting each other's eyes. They looked like a mother and daughter, locked in argumentative stalemate. But Clavaine knew better. He issued the mental command, well rehearsed now, which opened his mind to communion with the others. It was like opening a tiny aperture in the side of a dam. He was never adequately prepared for the force with which the flow of data hit him. The room changed, color bleeding out of the walls, lacing itself into abstract structures which permeated the room's volume. Galiana and Felka, dressed dourly a moment earlier, were now veiled in light and appeared superhumanly beautiful. He could feel their thoughts, as if he were overhearing a heated conversation in the room next door. Most of it was nonverbal. Galiana and Felka playing an intense, abstract game. The thing floating between them was a solid lattice of light, resembling the plumbing diagram of an insanely complex refinery. It was constantly adjusting itself, with colored flows racing this way and that as the geometry changed. About half the volume was green. What remained was lilac, but now the former encroached dramatically on the latter. Felka laughed. She was winning. Galiana conceded and crashed back into her seat with a sigh of exhaustion, but she was smiling as well. "Sorry, I appear to have distracted you," Clavaine said. "No, you just hastened the inevitable. I'm afraid Falco was always going to win." The girl smiled again, still saying nothing, though Clavaine sensed her victory, a hard-edged thing that for a moment outshone all other thoughts from her direction, eclipsing even Galliana's air of weary resignation. Falco had been a failed conjoiner experiment in the manipulation of fetal brain development, a child with a mind more machine than human. When he had first met her in Galliana's nest on Mars, he had encountered a girl absorbed in a profound, endless game, directing the faltering self-repair processes of the terraforming structure known as the Great Wall of Mars, in which the nest was sheltered. She had no interest in people. Indeed, she could not even discriminate faces. But when the nest was being evacuated, Clavaine had risked his life to save hers, even though Galliana had told him that the kindest thing would be to let her die. As Clavaine had struggled to adjust to life as part of Galliana's commune, he had set himself the task of helping Falca to develop her latent humanity. She had begun to show signs of recognition in his presence, perhaps sensing on some level that they had a kinship, that they were both strangers stumbling toward a strange new light. Galliana rose from her chair, carpets of light wrapping around her. "It was time to end the game anyway. We've got work to do." She looked down at the girl, who was still staring at the lattice. "Sorry, Falca. Later, maybe." Clavaine said, "How's she doing?" "She's laughing, Neville. That has to be progress, doesn't it?" "I'd say that depends what she's laughing about. She beat me. She thought it was funny. I'd say that was a fairly human reaction, wouldn't you? I'd still be happier if I could convince myself she recognized my face and not my smell, or the sound my footfalls make." "You're the only one of us with a beard, Neville. It doesn't take vast amounts of neural processing to spot that." Clavaine scratched his chin self-consciously as they stepped through into the shuttle's flight deck. He liked his beard, even though it was trimmed to little more than gray stubble so that he could slip a breather mask on without difficulty. It was as much a link to his past as his memories or the wrinkles Galliana had studiously built into his remodeled body. "You're right, of course. Sometimes I just have to remind myself how far we've come." Galliana smiled. She was getting better at that, though there was still something a little forced about it, and pushed her long, gray-veined black hair behind her ears. "I tell myself the same things when I think about you, Neville. But I have come some way, haven't I?" "Yes, but that doesn't mean you haven't got a considerable distance ahead of you. I could have put that thought into your head in a microsecond if you allowed me to do so, but you still insist that we communicate by making noises in our throats, the way monkeys do." "Well, it's good practice for you," Clavaine said, hoping that his irritation was not too obvious. They settled into adjacent seats, while avionic displays slithered into takeoff configuration. Clavaine's implants allowed him to fly the machine without any manual inputs at all, but, old soldier that he was, he generally preferred tactile controls. So his implants obliged, hallucinating a joystick inset with buttons and levers, and when he reached out to grasp it, his hands seemed to close around something solid. He shuddered to think how thoroughly his perceptions of the real world were being doctored to support this illusion. But once he had been flying for a few minutes, he generally forgot about it, lost in the joy of piloting. He got them airborne, then settled the shuttle into level flight towards the fifth ruin that they would be visiting today. Kilometers of ice slid beneath them, only occasionally broken by a protruding ridge or a patch of dry, boulder-strewn ground. "Just a few shacks, you said?" Galliana nodded. "A waste of time. But we had to check it out." "Any closer to understanding what happened to them?" "They died more or less overnight. Mostly through incidents related to the breakdown of normal thought. Although one or two may have simply died, as if they had some greater susceptibility to a toxin than the others." Clavaine smiled, feeling that a small victory was his. "Now you're looking at a toxin rather than a psychosis?" "A toxin's difficult to explain, Neville.